Hi, everyone. Welcome to Spill the OT. Today, we have our first live interview, so I'm so excited. I'm sitting next to the person I'm going to interview, and she is an occupational therapist, and now she works as a hippotherapist, so she works with horses. That's kind of like her part-time gig, and then she's also working in early intervention. So I'm going to hand it over, and could you start us off by sharing what type of degree you have and how long it took to get?
Hi, my name is Mary. So I started out, I did my undergrad bachelor's in psychology, and then I went to a 2.5 year program. And I mean, it was a pretty broad degree in OT. There weren't really specifics. Did take a PEDS class every semester, so there was kind of a focus on that, I guess you could say. And then I graduated and I started working at a skilled nursing facility. But with all the changes there in PDPM and a lot of my coworkers were getting fired and it was just a lot of bad things going on, I decided that I had to change. So I started doing part-time hippotherapy, and then now I do that as well as early intervention.
Sweet. That sounds good. So I don't know a whole lot about hippotherapy. I did like a very, very brief introduction to it a couple years ago, but can you share just what that looks like as an OT, and is it different than a PT and a speech, or does it all kind of present the same? Tell me everything.
So when I started, I really didn't know that much about hippotherapy. I had a coda at my SNF job, and she worked at this place, and she just had all good things to say about it. So I decided to check it out. I looked into a few different like educational resources about it. And basically the principle is that you're doing therapy on a horse because it mimics walking, so they have to weight shift. And you can do that with them sitting on the horse, kneeling, standing. But the main thing, as the outlook from the place that I work at, they just want the kids to have fun. So they're not necessarily always doing like the same type of outpatient interventions and things like that that you would see in a typical outpatient's PED setting. It's just really about having fun on the horse. I mean, they're playing, and you can look at it as an OT and write about it in a certain way, but the main thing is that the kids are having fun. So then, to compare it with SLP, I haven't seen an SLP at my job yet. I know they have one, and there are a lot of kids there that work on communication, and I think their main tenet is that the horses do have a calming effect, and they're very intuitive. Like, the horses can sense seizures, they can sense when you're not happy or uncomfortable. So I think that helps some kids to reach out and become just more comfortable with talking, communicating, things like that. And as far as PT versus OT, those are both really similar. But I mean, I can work on like grasp while the child is on the horse and do like fine motor interventions. And then the PT will work on like standing and jumping and more gross motor stuff.
Would a kid ever get OT and PT both at the hippotherapy place, or do they kind of have to choose one or the other?
So there's a really high demand at the place that I work at. There's a huge waiting list. So usually the kids will only get on one discipline just because of supply versus demand. But they could do all of them at once if they wanted to.
Oh, that's pretty cool. So how old are most of your kiddos?
So it's a lot like early intervention because it can be reimbursed by the state. It's like billed as, I think, an outpatient service, even though it's not really outpatient therapy. So they're 0 to 3 primarily. Usually they don't want a kid younger than 1 year old to get on the horse, but we have a few here and there if they're like developed enough. And then there's a few private pay kids, but that gets kind of tricky. If they get to be like 7 or 8 years old, they're small horses. And if you get a big kid on a small horse, it can be bad. So that's when you kind of have to stand up and say, I don't think this is appropriate, or whatever you want to do.
And what frequency do most of the kids get seen for?
At my facility, it's one time a week for 30 minutes, and I think kids could do more, but we have such a long waiting list that kind of has to become part of the factor, and the kids are getting so much therapy in other aspects of their world that's all that really works for them too. So
that made me think, so your kids are mainly seen for EI. Can they see another discipline on the same day that they come to see you for OT? Like, if they were having PT, EI at home, can they come to you that same day, or do they have to like pick and choose?
I think that they can have both because they're different billing codes. Like, EI uses one and then mine is outpatient. There's some kids that do outpatient on the same day as they see me, but I think that their parents are private paying for their outpatient. So that's the thing. I don't think they can do two outpatient services, like HIPPO and outpatient, the same day.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Can you start us off by just sharing like what a typical session looks like where you're positioned, who's pulling the horse, or do they pull a horse? I don't really know what happens. Tell me everything.
So we start inside of like an indoor ring, and I have someone that's walking with the horse. They're called the walker. There's a side walker that walks on the other side of the horse. And then there's me. So it's a pretty big team for a 30-minute session. The other two are typically volunteers. Sometimes they have staff members that know a lot about horses if you're just getting into it. I had somebody that was a staff employee, and she knew a lot about the horses when I first started. So she could tell me, like, this one's finicky about this, this one's finicky about that. So I take the kid from their parents, and I bring them into the ring. Most of them walk to the horse. If not, I just obviously carry them. And then I set them up on the horse. We do a couple rounds inside. We have a bunch of toys in the room. So they have like bubbles, puzzles, pegboards, all kinds of stuff. So we just play. And then some kids like being outside, some kids don't. But if they like being outside, we have a trail that we go out on, and you can bring toys with you or not. And we just go out there. There's hills, valleys, stuff like that to make it a little bit harder on the kids. So that's kind of the setup. And you just do all kinds of different things. They stand on the horse, they sit backwards, they sit sideways.
So if they're standing or kneeling on the horse, where are your hands? Do you hold on to them, or do you trust the kids? Like, how does this work?
So I guess you could say, like with a lot of therapists, some people are more strict than others. And I'm kind of in the middle, but I've seen some therapists that are more hands-off than I am. But what you do is you have one hand across the kid's thigh, and it goes like across to this handlebar in the middle, and then your sidewalker will do the same thing. So the kid's thighs are pretty much stabilized, and if they were to fall at all, they would just fall like backwards onto the rear end of the horse. If they stand, I usually have my hands around the kid's hips, and the sidewalker doesn't really need to have their hands on at all at that point because I'm kind of in control, but it varies. Like, once you get to know your kids, just like with anything else, once you get to know them, you can decide if you can step back a little bit.
This is probably really dumb, but I'm picturing your two hands on the kid's hips and then the horse walking. How does that? Oh, okay.
One of my hands and then one of the sidewalker's hands. So I have one hand free.
Even while they're standing?
No, when they're standing, I have both hands on, and the sidewalker will be the one like handing them a toy or something like that.
So you're kind of like side shuffling when you walk?
Yeah, kind of. So I'm lucky that I'm tall.
Okay. I'm like trying to picture it, but that makes sense. I thought at first you were walking with your hips facing the same direction as a horse.
When they're not standing, my hips are usually facing the same direction. But when they're standing up, I face the kid.
Okay. Got it. So what do you like about it? And what is a little more challenging about working as a hippotherapist?
Well, I just love working with the kids, and I'm also an animal person, so it's calming. It's kind of therapeutic for me, too, and I like that it's kind of a relaxed setting. I mean, we are doing OT, but like I said, the main tenet is that the kid's having fun. If a kid's not having fun, if they don't want to do it, there's so many other things we can do. We can do therapy in the back room. We have like a mat area. They don't have to get on the horse, because some of them come in and they're screaming and crying and they don't want to do it, but we never make them do anything they don't want to do. Obviously. And then the harder part for me has come kind of recently, because you are working with animals. I mean, they're very well trained and they're a calm breed of horse, but I've had a couple of times where the horse just looks at you the wrong way and starts to like sway back and forth, and you just, for me, I can like kind of sense it. The horse just gets really nervous, and you have to just kind of be intuitive and pull that kid off the horse. You just have to be ready for that. That's been kind of a learning curve for me.
Have you had any horse experience previously to this? Because I feel like it sounds like you're able to pick up their energy pretty quickly, but I don't know if everybody could pick that up as easily.
Well, I mean, I've worked with animals in the past, but never specifically with horses. I've like rode them recreationally over the years, but not a whole lot. My company gave us like a training course, and then I shadowed voluntarily for a month with a lady that's been doing it for like 7 years. So she taught me a lot. And then I had a woman that's like in the staff, and she taught me all about the horses. So it was kind of a gradual thing, but it's still kind of scary. You have to keep your eyes peeled.
I know. Horses are really cool, but they got those big eyes and just kind of intimidating. So the sessions are about 30 minutes long?
Yeah, 30 minutes, which flies by. That's so quick. But usually it's enough for the kids. Most of them are pretty tired after 30 minutes.
And then how much time do you have to document? And do you do that right after the kid leaves, or do you save it for the end of the day? And then what does documentation look like for this particular facility?
So I see kids back to back, 30 minutes at a time for 3 hours, so six kids. So I don't have an option to do it right after I see them, which I kind of wish that I did. But I do it all afterwards. It's handwritten. I feel like I'm still kind of getting into the lingo of it, but I have a lot of supportive therapists that are helping me along. So that part's not too bad. And we do a progress note every 8 to 12 weeks. So that's kind of a long, expansive time. I'm not doing them too often. And the thing for me that was hard to grasp at first was goal writing for these kids, because you don't actually usually talk about the horse when you're writing goals. It's more about like a dynamic surface, reaching, tossing, stuff like that. Some kids even just to tolerate the horse for this amount of time is a goal. So that's kind of, I guess, in any new, when a setting is new to you, that's kind of a hard thing. But
can you share what maybe one or two goals might sound like when you write them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, today I had a kid where his primary deficits were like communication and cognition. So it was his first time. It was an initial evaluation. And he did not want to get on the horse, but he would go next to the horse with his dad. And he was so agitated, he couldn't really describe what he wants. He has autism. So I wrote a goal that he would to request his wants or needs in 2 out of 3 trials. And then if you do like a motor goal, it would be like, patient will perform 10 sit to stands in this much amount of time, or like typical, like changing their grasping patterns or pinching, reaching, things like that.
Hey everybody, I am so genuinely excited to tell you about MedBridge. So MedBridge is a continuing ed site, and they have tons of continuing ed courses all available online. You can stream them at your own pace. They also have home exercise plans, which are incredible. You can literally build your own plan with pictures that can perfectly suit whatever client you're working for. It's honestly so awesome. And you get unlimited CEUs. And these CEU courses are just really intriguing and exciting. Like, I've done continuing ed online in the past, and these ones that they select are just very much in line with what I find interesting, and I feel like you might find them interesting as well. So, are you struggling with finding the resources for your time for CEUs? With almost 2,000 accredited evidence-based streaming courses, live CEU webinars, MedBridge is your all-in-one solution. And actually, if you use my code, it's SPILLTHEOT, capital S, capital T, capital OT. So SPILLTHEOT, one word, capital S, capital T, capital OT. You can get $175 off of your year-long subscription, which is awesome. I mean, that's like significant amount of money off. So if you are interested, please go check it out. Again, use the code SPILLTHEOT, capital S, capital T, capital OT, all one word. All right, I really hope that you go check it out. Enjoy.
That's kind of cool that your goals are actually reflective of kind of PT, OT, and speech. So you're doing like all three in one discipline. Do you find that, well, you might not know this, but like would speech kind of do the same thing?
I've looked at some of the speech notes. I haven't met her, but I know we have one. And hers were mostly focused on like communication and cognition, but some of the other things that I talked about, like will tolerate this for this amount of time, that can kind of overlap. I mean, we try not to, but yeah, it could be similar.
Cool. Thank you. So can we talk about money for a minute? I'm curious, like, how do you get paid? Is it hourly or is it salary? And can you share like approximately what you make, or at least how that compares to more traditional roles in OT that you've had?
So I get paid hourly. One thing that's a little weird is that I am only allotted 1 hour for prep and documentation. So even if it takes longer than that, my company's a not-for-profit, so they don't want me to bill for as long as it might actually take. Not exactly sure if that's legal, but that's the truth. That's how it goes.
Sorry, so they'll pay for 1 hour total for all of your students?
Yeah, they give you like 30 minutes of prep time and then a certain amount of minutes per kid for documentation. So if I took on more kids, I'd get a little bit more time for documentation. But they pay me $27 an hour, which I think is pretty moderate. I mean, it falls right in the middle of what I got working at a SNF and what I get working at an early intervention. So it's not too bad, but also it's the kind of job you couldn't do it 40 hours a week unless you're in incredibly good shape. You just couldn't do it, I don't think. I don't know anybody that does. So you can't really do 40 hours, which is why I do it part-time.
Oh, that's good to know, because I actually have a friend who is thinking about going to school specifically to become a hippotherapist. So she loves horses. She's worked on horses her whole life, and she's thinking of going to school to become an OT with the mindset to only do hippotherapy. I kind of shared a little bit with her just from my brief experience volunteering that most people tend to work part-time, not full-time, but that's interesting that you're finding the same thing at your place.
Maybe the fact that she's used to being around horses, she knows what to anticipate. But just right now, I was just telling you, like, my shoulders and my back are killing me from just being there for 4 hours. So yeah, it's very taxing. But the therapist that's been there for 7 years works there 3 days a week, probably like 25 to 30 hours. So, I mean, that's a good chunk of time.
So is there anything that surprised you about working in this field?
There was one big hurdle that I had to kind of give a lot of feedback on, is that at least at my facility, these aren't therapy people, they're horse people. They do like horse classes and training and stuff like that. So when it comes to therapy, there can sometimes be a lack of communication, or they don't understand my needs as a therapist. And I've had to really advocate and stand up for myself in a lot of situations. And I mean, they support me, you know, they do their best to support me, but you have to tell them what you need because they might not understand.
Can you give an example of what you might say that you would need to advocate for?
Yeah, so horses are really dynamic, and just like humans, they go through these phases of they don't want to do this, so they do want to do that. And there was a certain horse that I had, and I didn't know all the quote-unquote horse people did know, because they're with them all the time, that this horse wasn't supposed to go outside on the trail this week because he just was feeling moody. And that information wasn't passed on to me as a therapist or any of the other therapists. So we went on the horse and it out on the trail, and it got a little scary. Everything was fine, but it got a little bit scary. So I had to tell them, like, you need some sort of communication board with a therapist, because we're not here all the time like you are. So
I see. That makes sense. And that can probably get a little bit scary because, I mean, horses are bigger than we are. All right. Thank you for sharing all of that. Do you think that you can see yourself doing hippotherapy for a long while, or do you think this is something that makes sense for you during your younger years as a therapist?
I guess, honestly, that's something that I'm still trying to decide, because it does wear on me physically, but I love it so much. From what I've asked the therapist that's been there for 7 years, she says that most people do it for a couple of years and then kind of back out. But I hope that's not the case for me.
Yeah, it sounds like a really sweet job. I did just think of a question. How much assistance do you typically give your students? I'm sure it ranges, but what would be kind of best case scenario? What would be a really hard situation for you to walk in on?
So a few kiddos stand out to me. Mostly, you know, when I was even newer at this than I am now, I had a kid and her parents were private paying for her. She was 7 years old and she'd had a stroke. And she was walking around. She could walk fine. She got on the horse, though, and just it was dependent. And it surprised me so much. And I think that's one of those things where if you give too much assistance, they might lean into you. It could have been my own fault. But that was the most help that I've ever given. And it was kind of scary. But anyways, I mean, usually I give like mod to min assist. A lot of the kids do really well. There's one kid that has cerebral palsy and he's got so much like extensor tone that it's like a max assist. But generally, yeah, min to mod.
Do you know if the facility has ever had to say, no, we can't service this child or this person because their needs were too great?
I guess that's kind of like an example of what I was saying about you have to realize that you're kind of working with horse people. The people that admit them as patients, I guess they have some kind of degree or training in admissions, but sometimes they do admit kids that are inappropriate, and that's where you have to kind of advocate and say, you know, this kid can come back in this much time and we can reevaluate or something. But that's definitely happened where you have to say, this is inappropriate.
I'm trying to wrap up my questions for you, but how long do most of your kids stay on for services?
They get a choice. So they start with early intervention at usually about a year, a little over a year. So they'll stay until they're three typically, and then they have a choice. They can private pay and keep doing therapy, or they can go do this other service they do, which is pretty much just equestrian training. They work with somebody that's not a therapist, but they keep riding horses. So it's their choice.
Okay, that's kind of a nice setup that they give them an alternative that might be fiscally cheaper than paying for outpatient. Is there anything else that you'd like to share about hippotherapy or OT in general? Good, the bad, or the ugly?
Yeah, as far as hippotherapy, I think I've pretty much covered all that I have to say. But recently getting out of a job at a skilled nursing facility, I have a lot of thoughts about that we probably can't get all the way into. But basically, I left because I just didn't believe in the service model anymore. And the way my company wanted to do it was put everybody in a group all day long, and I just don't believe in that. So that's part of why I'm shifting into the kiddos. I don't know if anybody works in a SNF and has similar experiences. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, but yeah, that's all my thoughts basically.
All right, yeah, I want to have you on. Maybe you can do a full episode to just talk about what you learned in the SNF and how that's affected your career as an OT. Yeah. So my last question that I ask everybody, if you could talk to your 18-year-old self, would you send yourself to OT school?
No, not at all. No. I mean, I like working in hippotherapy and I like working with kids, but there are so much more fiscally responsible ways to do that. I probably would have been a teacher because I know what I want to do is just work with kids. I wouldn't have had to go get a master's. So the short answer is no.
Yeah, I know. And we're laughing because we've talked about this previously. We're both kind of feeling a little bit stuck in our fields. And that's not to discourage any of you guys. Like, if you're in school or if you're a new OT, don't let us discourage you. It's just everybody's on their own journey. And I think that we just all come at it from a different approach. And I think there's always highs and lows to any career. So I might be in a little bit of a low, and it sounds like you might be in a little bit of a low as well. But we're doing our best. We're all just doing our best.
And it works out differently. It works out differently for everybody. I mean, I know a lot of people that I went to school with still love OT, and they live in a different part of the country as me, which I think might be a factor. I mean, again, not to discourage anybody, but you can go on Indeed and Indeed will tell you, as an OT, you'll make this much money. But there's so many other factors in that, and I don't really know how to tell you to explore what your reality will be. Maybe ask therapists if they're okay with actually talking to you about, you know, the nitty-gritty of what they do every day and what they get paid. But if you just Google, how much do I make as an OT? Are there good jobs? Blah, blah, blah. They'll tell you yes, but it's not as cut and dry as that.
Oh my God, that's so true. So we obviously live in the same region. That's why we're able to be here in person today. But if you go online and Google what an occupational therapist will make in our area, I think the average is like 85,000.
Yeah.
I've never gotten remotely close to that. Have you?
No, not at all. Not even in a SNF.
So I like your advice. Just do your homework a little bit. I know that lots of people in other areas of the country, they can easily make that as a new grad. So I think it totally depends on your region. And I like your advice to just ask people who are out in the field working. And I know it's kind of an uncomfortable question to ask, but I think people secretly want to share this information. They just have kind of been trained by society not to. But
I think too, this might be, I don't know, this might not be true at all, but it's kind of what I've thought recently. OT is a female dominated career. And I think as women, we're not as used to talking about the money side as men are. Like, I know my husband talks about how much he makes with his coworkers all day, no problem. But I think as females, we might be a little bit more afraid of that. I don't know why, but it's something that I've seen. But yeah, I think that'd be the best way to discover, you know, what a day-to-day life as an OT would be, is just ask one. It might be a little bit intimidating, but most of them, I bet, would be willing to share.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on here. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right. And I'm going to get you back in a couple of weeks to talk about SNFs.
Deal. Done.
All right. Thank you. Bye. All right, everybody, I hope that you enjoyed listening to Mary as much as I did talking to her. And as always, you can find me at spilltheot@gmail.com. You can follow me at spill_the_OT. And I hope that you have a great week. Bye.